Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's time for Below Grade Level. Put that 17 magazine away and listen to this.
Hello and welcome to Below Grade Level, the show where we take the books that we read as kids and read them as adults and ruin them. I'm one of your hosts, Jonathan Eaton. With me as always is Becca Eaton.
Hello.
And Chris Zaleski.
Happy to be here.
We have some returning champions on today's episode. Kata and Ned Kane. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Also. And
who's there? Who's also there?
You want to introduce yourself?
I'm Edie.
Edie.
Hi, Edie.
Welcome to the podcast. Do you know what a podcast is?
It's okay if you don't.
That's okay.
Tell them all about it.
They're not important.
It's just us sitting around and talking and being silly.
It's just us talking into microphones.
And we're going to read. That's something you've been learning how to do, right?
Oh, yeah. God. It's so exciting. Well, I'll just go ahead and... Well, actually, no, Becca's going to do the recap.
Bye. Bye.
You're going to go?
Bye.
Bye. You can come back anytime.
Yeah, you'll be back. Don't worry. What?
Let her...
We sent her back to the portal.
Bring her back when she learns how to read.
Hey.
Okay, so... To catch you up on this book so far, it's called Fight Fire with Fire. It's the second book in a 3-book like mini series of Sweet Valley High. It really does feel like not that much has really happened to recap.
Not much.
So,
chapter 5, and not much has happened in a book called Fight Fire with Fire.
That is the second of a trilogy.
Yeah.
Wow.
So Lila is. We've read Sweet Valley with you guys before, so I don't need to explain the premise. It's just twins.
Yeah, and that's the reason why we did a Batman voice for Elizabeth for like
and the Jabba voice. I will always remember. So Jessica's best friend Lila has been arrested for suspected arson.
Yes,
because her house burned down and also a restaurant she was at got firebombed.
Yep.
And they suspect it was her because she had matches in her purse or some shit.
I don't remember.
In her trunk.
Yeah. So Lila is dating the twins' older brother, Steven, who just got fired from his job as an intern for the DA's office.
Yes.
And he was fired because he was doing too much work in investigating and trying to help Lila, like he bailed her out of jail.
Yeah.
So he just got fired from his job.
The with twins fire.
Fired with fire. The twins, even though Lila's Jessica's best friend, the twins both hate that she's dating Steven because they're both weirdly obsessed with their brother.
Yeah.
So. Even though Elizabeth is supposed to be the good twin, they are both currently the villains of this book.
That is correct.
Because they, like, faked a letter from Steven that made Lila want to break up with him.
It was incredible. Yeah, they wrote a letter from Steven to Lila that was like, I can't wait for us to have 100 children, and I'm not going to be pulling down that much money.
Yeah.
We won't be rich in currency, but we'll be rich in family. And they knew it would bother her because apparently she's materialistic. Rich.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
So basically their entire plot of this book is just trying to break them up. That's the only thing they're
doing. That's the only thing they've done. Yeah.
With fire, though.
I hope there's some sort of fire in this book. There hasn't been so
far. There's got to be a third fire. Rule of threes.
Oh, I hope so.
So Steven is still investigating. He broke into the evidence room right after he got fired because they didn't have security walk him out.
Yeah.
So he went and looked at some evidence and saw a soda can.
Something about a soda can.
Sorry. And he is, the last thing that happened in the last chapter was he brought Lila to a convenience store to buy the soda. And she's basically like, ew, soda's gross.
Yeah,
I want sparkling water.
She's like, Steven, what are we doing here?
So he's trying to prove that she's innocent because of a soda can that he saw in evidence. Also, there's another plot where there's a guy named Devin, who's from Connecticut.
Yeah.
That his parents died and they were assholes and they were rich and he's a minor, so he needs to find family to be able to get his inheritance.
It doesn't make
any
sense.
So he's been like traveling across the country trying to find family. And he had a really bad time in Vegas, apparently, and I really wish we had read that book because that sounded fun.
Yeah. He had like a crazy Vegas uncle.
He became the founder of 23andMe.
One like this again. Family.
And he just got a letter in the mail at the motel he's staying at from Nan, who was his nanny when he was seven.
Naturally. Whose name is also Nan.
Her name is Nan, and she was the nanny.
And she was a nanny.
And
I was born to Nan.
And he calls her Nana. I don't. Yeah. I wrote
Nan, Nana, nanny.
Yeah.
God.
And so she lives in Sweet Valley. So now he's gonna go visit her in Sweet Valley. At first, we were like, of course, this guy did the arsons, but he's not even in the state of California yet.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know what he's doing in this book at all.
I can't wait for him to show up and. I don't know.
Sorry.
I don't know what is going to happen with Devin Whiteclaw.
I can't talk about Devin Whiteclaw. Oh, yeah. His last name's Whitlaw. What is it? Whitlaw.
I can't remember what it is. Whatever it is, it's definitely we're just reading it as Whiteclaw. As far as voices go, we haven't done anything too crazy other than just like the typical kind of bitchy voice for Jessica and then like kind of rich, snobby voice for Lila. And everything else is pretty much fair game. So let's just jump right in. Chapter 5, Sweet Valley High, Fight Fire with Fire. Stephen walked out of the convenience store, grabbed Lila's hand, and led her to the grassy area next to the asphalt. It was time to prove his theory once and for all. Take this, Stephen said, holding the can of Pro Sport soda out to her. He noticed her delicate hands were trembling. Honestly, this is so weird, Lila muttered. As she started to crack the tab on the can, Stephen put his hand over hers. Wait, don't open it, he said. It's a bomb. Stephen watched Lila's mouth twist into a pout. She let her breath out in an explosive little burst. Honestly, Stephen, you're being really strange. First you insist on buying me a soda I don't even like. Then, when I'm actually going to drink it, you stop me.
Hold on.
Yes.
I'm recovering from flu rona, and I just talked way too much.
Yeah.
And now my throat hurts. Beer will help.
Can I get you a lozenge or some honey?
Yeah, just pour some honey down my throat.
Mm-hmm. Lozenge lager.
Ooh.
She tossed her hair impatiently. Calm down, Lila, Stephen said with a grin. Where's your sense of adventure? My idea of an adventure is a cruise to the Caribbean, Lila said, rolling her eyes. Not a rendezvous at the local Stop and Hop. Hop, not shop.
Stop and Hop.
The grin disappeared from Stephen's face. When did she get so whiny, he thought. She's acting like a cranky child. She was doing this from the first second we saw her in this book.
She's acting consistently.
Yeah. Then he remembered that she must be under a lot of stress. It was unfair to keep her in the dark about his theory any longer. Yeah.
And us, the audience, like, I don't know what's going on.
But he didn't want to tell her until he was absolutely convinced he was right. Listen, Lila, Stephen began, placing his hands on her shoulders and looking her directly in the eyes. I don't want you to drink the soda. I want you to throw it.
What?
Lila screeched. Stephen turned her gently toward the grassy field and pointed to a line of trees about 50 yards away. I want you to throw the can of soda up and out as high as you can and as far as you can at the same time, he directed.
Lila has never thrown a thing. No. Doesn't he know how rich she is?
Just a fit.
Yeah. Oh my god.
It's going to be like when Mr. Burns threw something and it just fell straight down.
Yeah.
As Lila opened her mouth to speak, Stephen gently touched a finger to her lips. Shh, Lila, please, just do it. Lila took a deep breath, rolled her eyes again, and tossed the soda can into the air.
It made a small arc and landed a few yards away. Stephen trotted over and retrieved it. Try harder, he said. Give it all you've got.
I'm not exactly football player material, Lila said huffily. She drew back her arm and threw the soda can into the air. This time, it made a higher arc and landed farther away. That's the best I could do, she said breathlessly. Great, Stephen said brightly. It was more than great. It was perfect. He retrieved the soda can once more. Watch this. He snapped back his arm and grunted as he threw the can high into the air. Then he turned back to Lila and grinned.
This is a super weird way to show off to your girlfriend.
Look how far I can throw.
You ever thrown soda cans before, Ben?
Bravo, Lila said sarcastically. Now, are you going to tell me what's going on? She asked, putting her hands on her hips. Stephen took both her hands in his and clasped them tightly. He was so excited about breaking the case and proving Lila innocent, he could barely contain himself. I saw the bomb come through the restaurant window, Stephen explained. It broke the glass near the top, and those windows are at least 10 feet high. Lila still looked confused. Don't you see? Stephen ran his hand over Lila's hair. I had to throw the can as hard as I could to get it that high.
You want to go first?
Sure.
Yous couldn't possibly have thrown it that hard. Besides, it would never even have occurred to you to use to purchase pro sport. But I don't understand what pro sport means.
Lila said, knitting her brows.
Today, before I left the office, I found a fragment of pro sport among the bomb and paraphernalia in the evidence room, Stephen said. It was all twisted and a little charred, but I could make out the label as clear as day.
What? That's great, Stephen,
Lila said, heartfelt, half-heartedly.
But how is this going to prove I'm innocent? Just because I wouldn't buy pro sport for myself doesn't mean I wouldn't buy it to make a bomb. That lawyer could argue that.
You're right, Stephen said. But I wasn't counting on you proving my innocence. I think the fact that yous can't throw to save your life does that. I was really counting on a pro sport proving someone else guilty.
What do you mean?
Lila asked, crossing her arms over her chest and narrowing her eyes. The day Liz and I checked out John Pfeiffer's desk at the Oracle, guess what I found? Stephen asked excitedly.
Lila looked a bit ill at the mention of John Pfeiffer's name.
I'm so mad at how good you are at doing that voice.
Which one?
The color drained from her face, and for a moment, Stephen was afraid she might faint. He reached out and took her hand, squeezing it to reassure her. John's desk.
I found a can of Pro Sport soda, he said in a soothing tone.
So soothing.
No one with that voice has ever said anything soothingly.
Are you sure? Lila asked quietly, her eyes dazed.
Totally sure, Stephen answered. He led her back to his car, opened the door, and helped her into the seat.
She looked so fragile all of a sudden, the way she always looked when the subject of John Pfeiffer was raised. Stephen knelt on the blacktop in front of Lila, whose feet were dangling from the open door.
I'd like to kill him for everything.
I'd
like to kill him for everything he's put you through, Stephen said, reaching up and caressing Lila's milky white.
Ew.
God.
Gross.
Porcelain.
Do you really think he's behind all this? Lila asked quietly.
Nathan, do you think this new evidence really proves he's guilty?
Stephen looked up into Lila's brown eyes and noticed they were swimming in tears.
It's a jock soda for a jock who would have been strong enough to toss that bomb through the restaurant window, Stephen said firmly. Plus, he is
jock
a most
soda.
Ruin your life. He thinks you ruined him.
It sounds like Mel Gibson's Australian accent. Oh my God.
I still can't wrap my head around what this soda is.
I wasn't mad before, but I'm mad now.
What, John Pfeiffer?
No, I can't wrap my head around what this soda is.
Oh, it's a jock soda for
yellow soda.
It's a metaphor for his...
The way they're describing it, they described it a lot in the last chapter, too. But it sounds like if Gatorade was soda.
Yeah.
It's like lemon sport soda. What the fuck does that mean?
And it's so heavy, a girl can't even throw it.
Not with milky white cheeks.
Its weight comes from the vitamins.
God.
You open the can, you pour it out, it's just powder.
It's just us. I really believe we have our man. I just want to make sure I have enough for an airtight case before I go to the DA. Lila took a deep breath and let it out shakily. She didn't look too happy about the news. Lila, I know this whole thing has been tough on you, Stephen said carefully. Are you happy that it's almost over? It's so hard for me to do this voice consistently. Lila blinked a few times and then looked into his eyes. I just wonder if we'll still be together when this is all over. Oh, wait, hang on. I just wonder if we'll still be together when this is all over. She said in a voice barely above a whisper. There was a sharp pang in Stephen's heart and he dropped dead. The end. Then he sucked in a quick breath. He was surprised that Lila's words made him so uncomfortable. An image of Billy, that's his ex-girlfriend, appeared in his mind. He pushed it away and tried to focus on the girl who was here with him. Sure, we'll be together, he said slowly. He watched a corner of Lila's mouth curl downward.
Don't set me on fire or anything.
They're high school or college age?
She's high school and he's college,
I guess.
We
think he's college aged?
I think so.
With this fancy...
He's at least a law student. He's a law student, yeah. Because he was an intern.
So I think he's in law school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think you'd get a job as an intern after you graduate.
No. And I don't think he was... I just don't think he's that much older than them. I think they're probably like high school.
But they'll be
seniors.
Together forever.
Yeah, they will be together forever. Course. Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah, don't worry. Perfect. She folded her arms. Not if you want us to be together in a house full of dogs and babies having barbecues in the backyard, she said. Stephen's eyes widened. Where did that come from? Lila's eyebrows shot up. Isn't that your dream of the future? A little house with a white picket fence and dogs and babies crawling all over the place? Crawling? The dogs crawling?
Dogs crawling on the babies and the
dogs
babies
crawling all over babies.
The dogs don't have back feet, so they just kind of scoot with their front legs.
You just want a pit of dogs and babies in the backyard with the barbecue crawling.
One of those tacky plastic kids wading pools in the backyard.
Hey.
I know. We were just talking about ours.
Yeah.
Stephen continued to stare at Lila as he tilted his head to one side. Like a dog.
Like a dog, yeah.
Yeah, sort of, he said, although not necessarily the tacky kiddie pool. Is there something wrong with that? Lila gave a short, harsh laugh. Well, yeah, I think there's something wrong with that. It's not exactly what I pictured for myself. I want a much more sophisticated kind of life.
It does sound sophisticated.
Stephen was totally shocked.
I was just fired by the DA.
Stephen was totally shocked by Lila's sudden shift from quivering victim to angry snob, even though she's already done it 10 times in this book.
It's and almost like he doesn't
know
her.
Who said he was going to ask her to marry him anyway? He was only 18, for Pete's sake. Oh, thank God we finally have an answer.
When we start using, what is it? Quivering. Go back up. Quivering victim.
Yeah.
You're either the quivering victim or the angry snob rather than the virgin or the whore.
Yeah.
Yes. That's perfect.
Of course.
Yeah. Now, thank you.
Caviar and champagne.
I'll be trying out for the part of quivering victim.
Caviar and champagne, that's what's important to you, right? Stephen said.
Oh, shit.
He couldn't keep the trace of a sneer out of his voice. Now it was Lila's turn to be indignant. What's wrong with caviar and champagne? What's wrong with wanting to go to glamorous places and do exciting things?
Like set them on fire.
Like throw firebombs. Stephen stood up and looked down at Lila. Let's just chill out, he said. Why are we fighting about this anyway? We've got something more important to do. I want to prove your innocence and clear your name. Let's forget about life choices for now and focus on the task at hand.
I think they forgot about life choices long ago.
That's when you know you're in a fight, when you start talking like you're in HR. Let's focus on the task at hand, Lila.
I just want to address what you said.
Yeah. Lila swallowed and looked up into Steven's eyes.
You're right, she whispered. I'm so glad you believe I'm not guilty. I was beginning to think everyone had turned against me. Not a chance.
let's listen to me struggle with a Baltimore accent. Steven said as Lila pulled her legs inside the car and closed the door. Steven walked around the front of the VW and hopped in behind the steering wheel. He reached over and touched a finger to Lila's chin, turning her to face him. He stared at her intently. I've never doubted your innocence for a moment, he lied. There was a time when the DA's doubts he had filtered in, but that was all in the past. There was no reason to tell Lila about it now. Lila smiled at him.
No, do it.
That's funny. It'll be fun. I didn't know that he had doubted her.
Yeah.
Lila smiled at him warmly, the first kind look she'd given him all day.
Damn.
Let's go wrap things up, Steven said, turning the key in the ignition. Where are we going? To the Oracle office.
To where?
To the Oracle office.
Going down the Oracle office.
We're going down the O. Steven answered as he pulled out of his parking spot.
It is even funnier for him to have this voice and for them to really be part of two different worlds.
The more evidence we have, the better. And from what I've seen of John Pfeiffer, I don't think he's level-headed enough to have covered all his tracks. A warm breeze blew against Devin's face as he rode his motorcycle through Sweet Valley.
Wait, what? Oh, okay.
Time has passed.
Time has passed.
We're in a different scene
or
now.
Meanwhile, I don't know.
Sometime later.
The town was even more beautiful than he had imagined. He traveled along pristine streets lined with trees and flowers, and all the people seemed to be smiling as if he hadn't a care in the world. Everywhere he looked, there was another beautiful girl. Devin drove past a slim blonde wearing impossibly short shorts. He flashed him a smile, and Devin grinned back.
She loved it so much.
Oh, she loved it.
Bless you.
Oh, he almost laughed at himself for feeling so giddy, but he couldn't help it. Even though he wasn't sure about Nana's motivations.
To wear the short shorts.
There was something about this place that told him he had finally come home. But Devin wasn't sold on living in Sweet Valley, not by a long shot. Nana would be the deciding factor. Devin felt a rush of anticipation surge through his veins. So many years had passed since he had seen Nana. Can I trust her? Devin wondered. He gripped the handlebars tightly and steered his motorcycle around a hairpin turn. The old question returned, can I ever trust anyone again? As Devin turned onto Hummingbird Lane, his head was clear and his thoughts were cool and rational. Don't expect anything, he told himself. That way you won't be disappointed. Devin glimpsed the number 13 on a wooden mailbox and turned into the driveway beside Nana's small, neat house.
He felt butterflies stir in his stomach as he took in the tiny lawn, white shutters, and window boxes filled with red flowers. He heaved himself off his seat and steadied himself, wondering if the weakness in his knees was the result of hours on the road or nervousness. How will Nana look? He wondered.
I hope she looks good.
Their old bond reappear? Or would they feel strained and awkward? Nana was a former lover of his.
I know, it's like she's an ex-girlfriend, but
yeah.
He hasn't seen her since he was like, 7 years old.
It's really, they really set up a January-December relationship.
With Fat this, Bottom Girls was based on his relationship with Nana.
Would this be the place he finally found an honest heart? Or was she another phony who would try to trick him out of his money? Devin realized his palms were sweaty. Mom's spaghetti. He wiped them on the front of his jeans. I might as well get this over with, he thought. Slowly, Devin made his way up the cobblestone walk and rapped on the front door. Again, Mom's spaghetti. His heart beat faster as he heard the faint sound of footsteps approaching from inside. The curtain that hung in the small glass pane in the center of the door was pushed aside, and Devin held his breath. He caught a glimpse of two very familiar eyes just before the door swung open. The woman cried, the corners of her blue eyes crinkling as she smiled. You're really here. She reached up to hug him tightly and then pulled back as if to get a better look at him.
Devin felt a sudden overwhelming wave of emotion. He had thought he would never see Nana again.
Or have emotions.
And now here she was standing less than 2 feet away. Devin looked at Nana in silence for a moment. In spite of the years that had passed, she looked almost exactly the same as he remembered. Her hair was gray instead of auburn. What child thinks, I remember my Nana. She had auburn hair.
He said that the last time.
Oh my God.
That it was auburn. But also like, what, maybe 9, 10 years have passed?
Yeah. Okay.
It was about 9 years.
Like, how old is she?
She was on the cusp of going gray. Okay.
A lot of city miles on that broad.
Her blue eye, her hair was gray instead of auburn, but she still wore it pinned on top of her head. Her blue eyes twinkled youthfully, although there were faint lines around them. What shocked Devin most was how little she was. He had somehow expected he'd still look up at her the way he had when he was a boy. Instead, he found that he towered over her.
You've grown so tall,
Nana said, as if reading his mind. A look of pride came over her face. She took his hand and led him into the house.
Oh, God.
And so it begins.
Gross.
You've got a cozy place here, Devin said as he put down his duffel bag, which all drifters contractually have to have. Everywhere he looked, he saw Nana's personal touches. The doilies she had crocheted, the pictures of plants and the pictures of plants and flowers on the walls. The china.
Sure.
I don't have any real plants, just pictures.
You don't have to water a picture.
Picture won't die.
Everything else dies.
Pictures can't disappoint you, Devin.
Because I'm going to paint a picture of you now.
Please remove your duffel bag.
The pictures of plants and flowers on the walls, the china vase full of daffodils.
Thank you, dear,
Nana replied. She laughed lightly.
I moved into this little house 10 years ago when I left Connecticut. There was...
I always struggled with that word.
That's why I left.
It's a tongue twister, Devin.
There was a little catch in her voice as she said those last words.
Oh, there you go.
Hey, I nailed it. And then Nana paused a beat and then continued on cheerily.
I was sure I'd be able to get something bigger soon, but it just didn't work out that way. What, the house?
Not until just now.
Yeah. Devin felt a prickle of suspicion. Maybe you think you can buy a better place now with my money, he thought.
Devin.
But he couldn't help feeling a moment of hope that it wasn't the case.
Learn
Devin's roaming eyes settled on a framed picture on the mantelpiece. He felt an inexplicable spark of recognition. Curious, he crossed the room and picked up the frame to examine the photo. It depicted a boy standing beside a rocking horse. Devin remembered the toy an instant before he recognized his own face. Why would it go in that order?
Yeah.
It's me, he said incredulously. Nana's mouth curved into a gentle smile.
I've never looked at a picture of myself as a kid and then gone like, it's like, me.
I remember that toy and my own face.
But who is that boy?
I remember those pants anywhere. I'm tired of those pants.
Gross.
I've kept it here for years and I've looked at it every day. Devin swallowed.
Jesus.
No, I believe.
Maybe she's the fire bomber.
The liar.
Devin swallowed. For a moment, he felt emotion pulling at his heartstrings. But in the next instant, he heard a warning bell sound in his head. Did she really keep that photo on the mantle all these years? He asked himself. He wanted to believe it was true.
He's so damaged.
On the other hand, she could have unpacked it and put it there to make him think she cared. He hated himself for being so suspicious. But after the way I've been treated, I can't help it, he thought.
He was so deep in thought, Nana's voice startled him.
Before we catch up,
Nana said,
I want to show you something. Follow me.
She led the way to the back of the house.
I hope it's like a big bag of money so he can stop being so fucking paranoid.
I hope it's a shrine to him.
It's a grave.
I made this doll out of your hair and baby teeth.
Up in, young one.
Its eyes are the teeth. Before we catch up,
Nana said, I want to show you something. Follow me. She led the way to the back of the house.
I won't hear of you staying in a hotel, Nana said as she walked down a narrow hallway. I fixed up the spare room for you.
Devin followed her into a small room with wood-paneled walls. White curtains hung in a large window that took up most of the back wall and bathed the room in sunlight. There was a small dresser and desk, and a patchwork quilt was spread over the surface of a neatly made bed.
I stitched it myself, she said. Does it look familiar?
Devin felt as if his heart had rolled over in his chest. Suddenly, he remembered. He had played with his toys at Nana's feet as she sewed the squares together. Just before Nana had pointed out the quilt, he had been about to protest, to tell her that he couldn't stay with her because he didn't want to inconvenience her. He had hoped staying in a hotel would help him maintain his distance and keep a hold on his emotions. Devin exhaled a long sigh as he ran his finger through his long brown bangs. What? I was sure I learned my lesson about being taken in by people, he said to himself.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, man, Devin.
Well, I'm standing here with my eyes practically tearing up.
He squared his shoulders and told himself to
get a grip. But as he looked into Nana's gentle, smiling face, he knew it wasn't going to be so easy.
All right.
Elizabeth spied her sister walking by the hallway outside the Oracle office. She jumped up from her chair so fast that she nearly tore the hem of her plaid skirt when it caught on a corner of the seat. She yanked the fabric free and ran to the doorway.
Jessica,
she called.
Come here. I want to tell you something.
Jessica turned and curiosity flickered in her blue-green eyes. She headed back towards the office, the pleats of her red miniskirt swinging around her legs as she walked.
Like I'm so glad we covered everyone's skirts.
Yes.
I feel important. Like I'm there, like I'm standing there.
Yeah, it's an important detail.
Miniskirts. Elizabeth pulled her inside and shut the door. The two girls were alone in the office.
You'll never guess who was just here, she said breathlessly.
Jessica rolled her eyes. I don't have time for guessing games, Liz. Why don't you just tell me? Elizabeth shook her pale blonde hair off her shoulders.
Honestly, Jessica, I was only using it as a figure of speech. I didn't really mean for you to guess.
I'm glad we cleared that up.
Lila and Steven were just here.
Jessica's face twisted into a sour expression. Together, she squealed. Elizabeth, she squealed. Elizabeth nodded rapidly. They were together, all right.
Oh, I was waiting for it.
I thought about it for a second. I thought so. They were looking for evidence to tie John to the restaurant bombing.
What a weird name to put in a book.
I also keep reading, like, every time they say John Pfeiffer, I think Jingleheimer Schmidt. That's what goes through my mind.
I put Jingleheimer Schmidt to the restaurant bombing. To burning down Fowler, she explained. Jessica sighed and sank into a chair. Bummer, she said. I was hoping that letter would do the trick. Maybe I should have written that Steven would expect his wife to wear polyester pants and house coats. Now that would have sent Lila running for the hills. I'm going for a Kardashian vibe here.
I like it.
Probably, Elizabeth said, cracking a reluctant smile. But the point is, it didn't work. Elizabeth sat down facing Jessica and fiddled with a pencil on her desk. I have to tell you, Jess, the thought of those two together worries me. It worries me too, Jessica said, a disgusted look on her face. What if he invites her over for dinner and we have to watch them making eyes at each other? I don't think I could. Yes, that's not nice. Elizabeth exclaimed, although the idea of Stephen mooning over Lila did make her want to vomit.
Why, though?
I don't know. Lila was Jessica's best friend.
Yeah.
And
maybe something happened in the last 130 books.
Yeah.
they had a falling out over their bomb society.
She wore the same outfit.
That's what I was going to say. It was miniskirt related.
Red pleated skirt. No top, just the skirt.
Mm-hmm. Really showing off.
Manifesto.
Lila's under investigation. Now Stephen is out of a job, and she's the reason. Elizabeth tapped her foot on the floor. We can't believe getting fired didn't shock him into giving up the case. What if Lila is guilty? He's playing right into her hands by going after John.
Jessica rolled her eyes. Not this again. It is a possibility, Elizabeth said, leaning forward. After all, the DA thinks she's the prime suspect. This is how high school girls talk.
Yeah.
Stephen's association with her might have ruined his whole career. Jessica leaned back in her chair, folded her arms, and frowned. Well, Stephen doesn't believe she's guilty, and I think he's pretty smart and handsome. I don't think he'd let his emotions interfere with his legal thinking either. Her frown deepened. I do believe his thinking is clouded when it comes to love, though. Even a moron could tell that those two are total opposites. She chewed her...
Whoa, sorry. We had a technical difficulty.
Wait, what happened?
We both were like, blah, at the same time.
Yeah.
She chewed her
funnies out, okay?
She chewed her bottom lip and spilled blood everywhere. Elizabeth stood up. Well, even if we have a difference of opinion about why Stephen and Lila should be together, we still agree that they shouldn't. She walked over to her computer and sat down. I saved the letter you typed from Stephen to Lila. I'm going to take a look at it and try my luck at a letter of my own. Oh, you Wakefields.
I'm going to use magazine cutout letters this time.
Yeah.
Across.
Jessica sat bolt upright and Elizabeth couldn't resist a smile. You're going to fake a letter? Jessica asked, her eyes widened with amazement. Why, Elizabeth Wakefield, I didn't think you had it in you.
Elizabeth's smile widened. I know, you thought being underhanded and sneaky was your department, she said as her fingers began clicking across the keyboard. But if you can write, I can be devious. She felt a little tingle of satisfaction at being able to shock her sister. I'm not the straight-laced little goody-goody you think I am, she said to herself. Elizabeth.
And her saying, if you can write, I can be devious, is that like an insult to her sister? Like, I didn't think you could write.
Yes, it is. Directly an insult.
I didn't think you were literate.
I didn't think you could put a sentence together, yeah. Let alone a whole letter.
I write her.
Last time we said we were only going to read chapter 5. Are we still doing that or read longer?
That went by pretty quickly.
Yeah. Chapter 6.
Is that cool with you guys?
How about we get through a round of pages?
Yeah. And then you guys pop off?
Yeah. And then we'll pop off.
Okay, that works for me.
Let's pop off on chapter 6.
Let's do it. Hey!
Thanks, Nana. This is great, Devin said as he watched her pile a second helping of fried chicken, corn on the cob, and mashed potatoes onto his plate. He had forgotten that this was his favorite childhood meal and was touched that Nana had remembered and gone to the trouble of preparing it.
Who wouldn't like that?
I know.
That's awesome.
I went to the McDonald's and got the last meal.
The Boston Market was having a special today.
What are those, what are the fried chicken places in Baltimore called?
Hip-hop,
yeah.
I went to the hip-hop chicken.
I'm glad you like it, dear. Nana replied.
An old person would call it something like I went to the R&B poultry place.
Went to the disco chicken.
I went to the rapping rooster.
No, disco duck.
Disco duck. These are all good names, guys. Should we start a restaurant?
Yes. When you were a little boy, you used to get the biggest smile on your face when I fixed it for you.
Moving on.
I just want to move on.
It's fine.
As Devin felt more memories come rushing back, he realized he was beginning to get used to these waves of nostalgia. Being around Nana seemed to spark memories he had long since buried deep in the recesses of his mind. Devin had rarely eaten dinner with his mother and father.
He wasn't permitted to disturb his parents while they took their meals at the long mahogany table in the dining room.
For a second, I thought you were making that up, and then I was reading it, and I was like, oh,
he's in the book.
He literally, he straight up wasn't permitted to eat with his parents.
Fucking
that's
hated
what we eat dinner with our kids. We're like, do not even come in the room.
Yeah.
Really long mahogany table.
Yeah. There's you guys have a basement for a reason.
Yep.
Down there. Done.
Right now.
He had almost always eaten his dinner with Nana in the kitchen.
With a pool cue broken in half.
While they ate, Nana would ask him questions and talk to him as seriously as if he'd been another adult. She was the only one who had ever treated him like a human being. Take it easy, Devin, Devin told himself as he slathered butter on the corn with his fork. There were lots of questions he wanted answered before he let himself trust Nana. He'd been burned twice before and was determined to be cautious.
Oh my god, it didn't even cross my brain auto-corrected fork to knife.
Yeah, or spoon, anything that's not that doesn't have tines. How do you put butter on corn
it's
with a fork?
It's hard to fork up butter.
Devin was never raised at the dinner table.
That's true. Yeah. He is from Connecticut.
He was raised by the help. I mean, of course he doesn't know better.
Yeah.
And I was like, here's your fork.
Here's your one utensil.
Like,
yeah.
Here's your fork. And then he does it. And she's like, idiot.
Gives him soup with the fork. Like, just laughs.
Like, you know, I have this picture of you the day I took you to the circus. And like, elaborate scheme, Nana. Devious.
Oh, I missed messing with you.
You're so stupid.
You always were a
dumb
little bastard.
You're still as dumb as you were when you were a kid.
Even though maintaining his cool hadn't been easy so far when it came to Nana, Devin put down his fork. I really don't think I should stay here, he said. When Nana started to interrupt, he motioned for silence. You're busy running that preschool all day, and this house is nice, but it's small, and I don't want to be a burden.
For a second, I thought you were doing, like, Kurt Douglas.
I started out that way, yeah.
Okay, good.
She's just struggling to hold it in. Nana patted Devin's hand quickly. Nonsense, she said with a reassuring smile. I already told you I'd love having you here. You can come and go as you please, and we can enjoy each other's company. All these years, I've been hoping to one day see you again. Devin heard a little catch in her voice. Yeah, that's right. I stumbled on purpose reading that.
We both nailed it, Chris.
Perfect.
Okay.
For an instant, his heart thawed. Then an icy shot of anger surged through his veins.
Jesus.
He's always having things surge through his veins when you...
He is a very tall, throbbing surge of...
Maybe he's bipolar and it's undiagnosed.
Yeah.
He had believed in his relatives. Am I crazy? Wait. He had believed in his relatives and then been devastated when their kindness turned out to be an act.
Yeah, but there's stuff that happened in book one that... we don't know details of, but he had tried to find family members to be able to get his inheritance or whatever.
They all just wanted
all
his money.
Tried to screw him
I
over.
Still think it's crazy that they introduced a new character in a book and never had him interact with Sweet Valley at all for an entire book.
That's crazy.
Yeah, we're at like almost a full book and a half and he hasn't met the twins yet.
Yeah.
The Devin Chronicles.
The words tumbled out of his mouth before he had a chance to think. If you dreamed of seeing me all these years, why didn't you ever try to visit me? He asked. Suddenly, he recalled how he had asked himself the same question over and over as a boy, and always felt heartbroken when he couldn't think of an answer. The memory fueled his anger. He fought to keep his voice calm and even. Why didn't you phone me? Wait.
What?
Why didn't you write? I never got a single letter. You never even sent me a card on my birthday or at Christmas? He threw down his napkin. When he looked up, he saw Nana's face was pale and there was a pinched look around her mouth. He gazed into her eyes, two black voids upon the deathless path of time. The indescribable horror that came over Devin at that moment would not be thought of, or he'd go insane. She held one hand curled up near her throat.
What?
Devrin.
Like a fist.
You must believe me. I wanted to contact you,
she said.
But this was, well, the first time I was able.
Devrin stirred in his chair. He let out a snort of impatience. I mean, to believe that, he demanded.
Do you know what a restraining order is?
It's been years.
The words hung in the air between them.
Please don't ask me any questions, Nana said shakily.
Oh my goodness.
Damn.
Tell you why I couldn't read you before now. You have to believe me. Trust me.
What?
Devin's eyes.
I don't.
Searched Nana's face, her beautiful milky white cheek. He took a deep breath in an attempt to calm himself. You were able to get in touch with me this time. How come? His eyes narrowed. What made you try harder?
Oh my God.
I just did.
Case closed.
Nana stammered. She reached across the table and put a hand on Devin's arm. Just made it difficult in the past. If you get
Your parents, Devin, obviously.
Yeah.
They're dead now.
Yeah. What's the obstacle that she would have had that is no longer there?
How dare you care for the boy?
Oh, Devin, you really are an idiot.
Still as dumb as ever.
So I just want to reiterate that Nana has put a hand on Devin's arm.
Mm-hmm.
Now Devin drummed his fingers on the table. What's this little game they're playing?
I don't know, but it's hot.
It's called arm drum.
What was different this time? He regarded her coolly. This former employee of ours you ran into, did he say something that suddenly made you want to have me around? Nana blinked rapidly. I don't know what you mean. Devin studied Nana's face, waiting for a crack in her innocent expression. There was none. But maybe that just meant she was a good actress. And Devin's really paranoid. Do you really want me to stay here? He asked bluntly. Of course I do, Nana said earnestly. You were like a son to me, Devin. Legally and figuratively. Devin felt his throat close up when he heard Nana call him son. It sounded so different when she said it than it had when his parents had said it.
You know, with love.
I bet that's the twist.
I know. Like, is she the real mom?
Oh, she's his mom. Gasp.
I had affairs with both of your parents.
Who knows who's who?
Hung over that mahogany table. Fingers were drumming.
I heard a rumor the Lady of White Claw Manor was barren.
What beast?
All right. Is that a wrap on Ned and Canna?
What page is that?
Wrap on us.
Wrap on us. We come from a bus. That bus went to trust and it is.
No, go on.
It's not the note I wanted. But
well, no, it's good that Ned reminds us that he's only human.
Yeah. I like to keep humble.
Can't bring the thunder all the time.
Yeah, that's true.
It would be too dangerous. Well, thank you guys so much for being on the show again and reading this with us. This was a blast. We'll have to do our best to fill the void that you leave.
Are we going to keep going?
Yeah.
Do it. We'll be back.
At least finish this chapter.
Okay.
Who's got the best Kermit?
Probably Chris, actually.
Oh, yeah. It is good. Chris, do it.
I like Ned's more.
Oh, we're all waiting for you to do it, Chris.
Being
do Kermit so they can leave.
Do Kermit.
Why are there so many songs about rainbows?
And what's on the other side?
Did you watch the new Jim Henson documentary?
No.
Oh, get ready to cry.
All right. Oh, man.
It was nice to see you guys.
It was like, great joining. To see you. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
For the listeners' benefit, we're all waving at each other.
Yeah. I wasn't waving, but I will now.
Okay, everyone. Okay, all now right, everyone's bye. Waving. Yeah. Okay. Oh, boy. His chest felt tight. Coming from Nana, Nana, the word sounded as if it actually meant something.
You've been taken in by people who seem to care before, Devin reminded himself again.
But he could feel himself aching to believe Nana, while at the same time part of him fought against it. Devin slid back his chair. All right, he said. I'll stay for a while, but I can't pay you anything. Some people thought I inherited a lot of money, but I didn't. My parents left me broke. He watched Nana's expression carefully. A look of horror, horror, came over her face.
Oh, that's terrible, she said. But it doesn't make any difference to me. I wouldn't dream of taking your money.
Devin looked down at his plate.
We'll see, he said to himself. We'll see.
Meanwhile, Elizabeth pushed open the door to the Wakefield house and tossed her keys into her purse. Jessica was right on her heels. I've got so much to do before Todd comes over, Elizabeth said. I've got to study for chemistry, I got to finish an article for the Oracle, and get started on my poetry project. She placed her purse on the table by the door. You'll manage, Jessica said as she waltzed into the front hall behind Elizabeth.
This is probably just like a me thing, but yeah. Like I don't understand studying. Like, do you just like read it a second time?
The only time I remember actually studying was in college, and it was because one of my college friends had like a little study party.
Oh.
And a couple of us studied for a test, and I ended up getting like 115% on that test.
Damn.
So it really worked. But like, yeah,
that's
basically
more than perfect.
I think there were like bonus questions. I think we had like, I can't remember if it was like potential questions that might be asked. Like we had some prompts or something, and we basically kind of read through our notes and like quizzed each other and shit. But yeah, otherwise I'm like, what do you do? Just read the book again that you already had to read as a homework assignment?
Yeah. I've talked about
it
before.
I never read it.
I was a terrible student. I didn't study.
Yeah.
I crammed.
Well, other than that, I didn't really, like, I didn't study for tests, I don't think. Like, maybe I would read through some notes.
Read through
but, like,
notes,
not
yeah.
Really?
I would, like, go through notes, but I would mostly cram. I would just, like,
yeah,
read.
I feel like I would do that in homeroom.
Yeah.
Like, I'd read through notes for whatever I had a test.
I also wouldn't take notes.
How did you
well, I guess
function?
You're just some kind of fucking savant then. Oh, we can swear now. You piece of shit.
I guess, because like I would always test well, and like my classmates would be like, how did you get a better grade than me? And I'm like, we read the same book. Like, it just wouldn't occur to me that.
Chris, like, are you, I don't know, what are they called? Not kinetic. There's different kinds of learning, but one of the kinds of learning is where you learn by reading. Is that you?
Oh, yeah.
That's
for
you?
For sure.
That is
and it
not.
Might, it might be visual.
Visual.
Like,
I think it is.
Hearing,
yeah,
my ears were always bad, so it was like, it was just like, no, like I would read the textbook instead of doing the actual work.
Yeah.
I would just read the textbook.
Kinetic is the opposite, where it's like you learn by doing. And that's me 1,000,000%. I cannot learn by reading. I have to do it.
It depends on what the thing is, because if it's something that's like theory or whatever,
yeah,
I need to read it. And like even with instructions of stuff, I like reading it really plainly, mm-hmm. if there's really plain instructions. But yeah. Doing it along with it helps.
I'm a read the instruction booklet all the way through before I even start kind of guy.
Yeah. Like with these classes I'm taking for work, there's video for part of it. And I just read the transcript, because if it's just a video of someone talking about a theory, my mind's going to wander. But if I read it, I'm actually reading it.
That's funny, because I would rather watch it, I think, than read it.
I can't focus.
That's interesting.
And this is boring. La, 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 la.
And Chris reading instructions front to back. I feel like I will start reading instructions, and then like one page in, I'm like, I'll figure it out. And then I'll just, not even I got this. I'll figure it out.
And then you hear a bunch of like, shit, and god damn it, like from the other room.
That's how I learn.
Son of a bitch.
Do you do that with recipes too? You just start doing it from the top? I give it a glance over, because it'll always forget to tell you something like, and by the way, the whole time you should have been preheating the oven something.
Recipes, it depends on the kind of recipe. If it's baking, I follow it exactly to a T, because baking is science and not cooking, and you can't fuck up a single goddamn thing.
Yeah.
Recipes, I do definitely, like, I'll skim it, and then I'll go back if it's... Like something like gumbo.
Yeah.
I read the recipe more because there's just so much, so many components. Yeah. But there's other stuff where I'm like, I got the gist.
Yeah.
I'll figure it out. I got the ingredients.
How many cloves of garlic? Your hair is very dinosaur-like.
Mine?
In like the best way.
I don't think it's mine.
I don't know. I don't know who he's looking at.
You.
Or talking to.
The person with longer hair.
Okay. Dinosaur-like. What kind of dinosaur?
I don't know. Like. Almost like a Dilophosaurus, how they got like crest.
That's fun.
Or like the some of them pteranodons that have like the beak, but they also have like the head beak thing, that goes forward.
Second head beak.
Yeah. So okay, so I'll just read the rest of the book like this.
Oh my god.
I am so glad that didn't even register over Zoom.
Look at the peak. Look at the peak.
Stop screaming. You did that the last episode too. Son of a bitch.
Wait, it's my turn, isn't it?
No,
My
turn. It's my turn.
I lost track. We talked about so many things.
I know.
This is what the show up for, though.
This is what happens when we don't have a guest.
Yeah. Just go off the rails and start shrieking. Come on, let's go into the den for a few minutes and watch Teen Talk.
What the fuck is Teen Talk?
I can't wait to find out. Elizabeth's determination to get her work done wavered. Teen Talk was an afternoon show that featured interviews with current teen celebrities, as well as a fashion section and other topics of interest. It would be nice to relax for a couple of minutes before she hit the books. Elizabeth, what the fuck? I don't even recognize her anymore. What has she become?
Oh, it's
apparently some shit's happened in the last 85 books.
Damn.
Did she kill anyone yet? Because doesn't she kill someone at some point?
I don't remember.
I wonder if that happened yet.
I'm sure they deserved it. Team Elizabeth all the way.
I mean, if I had to choose, for sure.
Okay, she said as she followed her sister to the den, but just for a little while. Jessica swung open the den door and stopped in her tracks. Elizabeth narrowly avoided slamming into her and looked over Jessica's shoulder to see what had startled her sister. Oh my god, I hope Steven and Lila are making out.
Definitely.
Jessica swung open the den door sounds like a Decemberist song.
Stephen was slumped on the sofa, staring straight ahead with a bewildered expression on his face. There was a letter in his hand. Elizabeth shot Jessica a surprised glance. I didn't think Stephen would get his mail so fast, she whispered. It looks like my letter made quite an impression. Oh, she wrote
a letter from Lila. From Lila to Stephen.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Jessica winked in reply and rushed over to their brother. Stephen, are you okay?
She asked, Jessica
kneeling
Wingfield.
Next to him. You don't look so good, Elizabeth added, hurrying after Jessica. She sat down on the couch to Stephen's left.
I'm okay, he said slowly without looking up. He waved the wrinkled letter in front of his face.
Wrinkled.
It's just that I found this letter from Lila stuck in the mailbox, and it's so weird. Weird? Elizabeth echoed to prompt him. Weird, Stephen repeated. He smoothed the paper and started to read. I love you. I can hardly wait until I finish high school and we can begin our lives together. We'll travel to all sorts of exotic places and invite all the right people to our parties. I know I can make you a celebrity among lawyers, more famous than F. Lee Bailey.
What?
What? Who?
A Stephen celebrity among lawyers.
Stephen stopped abruptly and grimaced. A celebrity among lawyers? What a thing to say, as if I want to be some kind of superstar. I don't even know who F. Lee Bailey is. He shook his head.
Francis Lee Bailey Jr., better known to the general public as F. Lee Bailey, was an American criminal defense attorney.
What, did he have any famous cases?
He served as an attorney in a number of high-profile cases. Oh, wait, hang on. Sam Shepard, surgeon accused of murdering his wife. High-profile cases, there's Albert DeSalvo, suspect in the Boston Strangler murders. Heiress Patty Hearst trial for bank robberies committed during that thing. And something about a massacre. He was a member of the Dream Team in the trial.
Something about a massacre.
Oh! He was a member of the Dream Team, in quotes, in the trial of former football player O.J. Simpson.
Ah.
Which we all know what he did.
What did he do?
O.J. Simpson, he starred in a couple of these movies called Naked Gun, which were super funny. Some say too funny, and so they tried him for it. And he's super guilty.
America's sweetheart, O.J. Simpson. The one James Cameron wouldn't cast as the Terminator because he wouldn't believe anyone would think of him as a killer.
Is that true?
That's very true.
I made myself laugh so hard. I'm crying. Oh boy.
Anyway, he shook his head. I can't believe how superficial Lila could be sometimes. Well, she's always been that way, Stephen, Jessica said. Stephen gave a low whistle. Plus, she's practically got us engaged. Just yesterday, we agreed to put off any thoughts about the future until we cleared Lila's name. Elizabeth got up and walked to the bookcase, opening a secret passage. I'm surprised you and Lila were talking about the future so soon, she said, trying to sound casual. You haven't been seeing each other very long.
She glanced at Jessica and gave a slight nod. She's right, Jessica said hurriedly. Lila's really moving fast. Stephen put the letter on the coffee table and threw up his hands. That's what I think! We stopped at Shop and Hop. That rhymed too much. We stopped at Shop and Hop for some sodas yesterday, or you could say pop. We stopped at Shop and Hop for some pop yesterday, and all of a sudden
later they rebranded as Shoppenheimers.
Shoppenheimers! And all of a sudden Lila went off on some strange tangent. She started spouting off about a little house full of dogs and babies crawling all over each other. Are you serious? Elizabeth gasped, trying to keep from smiling. Yes! Stephen spread out his arms.
Are the worst.
And shrugged. She practically had us walking down the aisle. We actually got into a fight about our future. It was unbelievable. Believe it. Jessica gave a short laugh. I'm glad you're starting to see what Lila is really like. Stephen rubbed his hands over his. Jessica rubbed her hands all over Stephen's face.
I believe it.
Stephen rubbed his hands over his face. I told her to put those thoughts on hold, and it seemed like she agreed with me. He stabbed a finger at the letter. Now this! It's like everything I said went in one ear and out the other. Stephen got up, crossed the room, and stared out the window.
You know, like an 18-year-old does.
I was just going to say.
Pensively. Yeah.
Swirling a glass of whiskey.
Yeah.
It was a thunderstorm outside. Elizabeth and Jessica exchanged smiles of satisfaction. Elizabeth was surprised that in spite of feeling guilty for doing something underhanded, she was proud of herself, too. She pushed that feeling into the background, deep down inside, into a little ball where it would never hurt her.
That she calls her Jessica Place.
After all, it wasn't as if she did this for fun. She wrote the letter to save her brother from a terrible fate, Lila Fowler. Elizabeth turned and walked over to stand next to Stephen.
I really hate her.
You knew Billy for a long time before you started planning a future, Elizabeth said tentatively. You had formed a bond, and you had a lot in common. Maybe you shouldn't have let her go so easily. I second that statement, Jessica said as she jumped to her feet. Billy was a girl for you, not Lila. I mean, Billy actually liked your dirty old t-shirts and jeans. If you ask me, you're better off without Lila. Nobody asked you. Jessica winked at Elizabeth and flounced out of the room. They're being so subtle about this. Elizabeth watched Stephen's shoulders sag a little. They must have struck a nerve talking about Billy. Stephen, maybe you and Lila rushed into this, Elizabeth said. You were rebounding from your breakup with Billy, and Lila had just broken up with Bo. Bo Creighton? Creighton?
Yeah, Creighton.
Creighton? Creighton?
Bo Creighton, Lila's long-distance boyfriend, had called to break up with Lila the night before the fire. Have they been dating for like 2 weeks?
Bo Creighton. Oh my God.
I mean, not 2 weeks literally, but like it feels like it can't have been that long.
Bo Creighton sounds, if you were to ask me, picture Bo Creighton. I am picturing a guy in a dingy straw hat and overalls with nothing on underneath. And
I think it might be Creighton.
Dirty bare feet with like a hayseed sticking out of his mouth, and he's like in a creek currently.
Yes.
And he's cracking corn.
It's definitely not Creighton. I was just being silly.
It's definitely Creighton.
I'm so tired. Bo broke up with Lila the night before the fire. Maybe all the drama over the case has made you believe you have feelings for Lila when you really don't. Stephen whirled around. That's not true, he said firmly. My feelings for Lila are real, and I think she's a great girl.
And don't even start it on the fact that you think she's guilty. Elizabeth took a step backward. Okay, okay, she said. Let's not start any fires here. But look at the way she's planning your future. And it's not a future you want either. Maybe you should cool it with her. You know, douse the fire. And while you're at it, maybe you should think about talking to Billy, too. You meant a lot to each other.
You know, fan the flames.
You're right, Stephen said, turning to face Elizabeth. I am? Elizabeth asked, surprised at his sudden change of heart. She felt a surge of hope. Maybe he had decided to call Billy. Maybe he was coming to his senses after all. Yes, you are, Stephen said. But it's my life. Stay out of it, Elizabeth.
Damn.
Fuck you, Elizabeth.
Sometime later. Early Thursday evening, Jessica was striding briskly toward the Dairy Burger, feeling on top of the world. A guy in a red convertible slowed down and gave Jessica a long look. She smiled and waved, happy that she'd decided to wear her new black mini dress. It totally showed off her perfect California tan. She stopped and checked her reflection in a store window, flipping her hair over her right shoulder.
Holy shit.
Of course I'm stopping traffic, Jessica thought contentedly.
Jesus Christ, Jessica.
Classic Jessica.
I'm walking on sunshine. Wow.
Although Jessica was more than aware of all the admiring glances, they weren't the reason she was in such a good mood. She'd called Lila earlier and asked her to come to the Dairy Burger. Sorry, I have only just now read how dairy is spelled. And that was not what I was expecting. Okay. Tucked into her canvas tote bag was a present that was part of her plan to accomplish two things at once. Get Lila out of Steven's life and renew Jessica's relationship with her best friend. I thought she hated her. What?
Well, no. She wants her as a minion, not as a sister-in-law.
Okay. All Lila's personal photographs had been destroyed on the night of the Fowler Crest fire. When Jessica realized how devastating it would be if she had lost all of her own mementos, she had decided to cheer her friend up by making her a photo album. She had dug out tons of photos of her and Lila and the rest of their friends that dated all the way back to kindergarten. She'd even mixed in a few photos she had found of Lila's family from her parents' wedding and other functions. It's a work of art, Jessica thought proudly. How...
Doing the right thing for the wrong reasons.
Right.
How long did this take? That's a lot of effort.
Yeah.
She had carefully glued all the pictures to delicate gold paper and bound the pages with thick black... She made a book? Thick black tape. The book closed with a silver clasp, which she handcrafted herself with a smelter. Jessica planned to give Lila the album, get her all teary-eyed over the fabulous times they'd had together, then steer the conversation toward, quote-unquote, Steven's vision of the future. Or the future I made up for him, Jessica thought with a giggle.
God, Then Lila would realize that if she planned to stay with Steven, she would have to give up her entire way of life. The way of life that included all the great times depicted in the photo album.
Neither of them are 20 years old yet. Yeah. Like,
oh, all God. The fun times they have hanging out in a parking lot. A brilliant plan, Jessica thought as she pushed open the door of the Dairy Burger. Who says Elizabeth is a smart one? Excitedly, everyone. She scanned the interior of the restaurant. At first, the only customers she saw were a couple who were paying a lot more attention to each other than to their burger deluxe platters. Then she spied Lila.
Giving each other handies under the table.
Sitting in the last booth, hunched over a magazine. From the distracted look on Lila's face and the half-hearted way she was turning the pages, Jessica could tell she wasn't really interested. Lila was a picture of loneliness. Jessica felt a pang of sorrow for her former best friend. Good! For a fleeting moment, she thought she shouldn't bring up Steven at all. Maybe we can talk about something else, Jessica thought. Something that will cheer her up and take her mind off what's been going on. But a moment later, her conscience was silenced by her inner fucking demons.
Yeah.
Jessica drew herself up straighter and took a deep breath.
Jessica has two devils, one on each shoulder. Yeah.
She knew she had to keep Lila and Steven apart no matter what. This is insane. Like, the longer it goes on, the less sense it makes.
Yeah, it didn't make sense to begin with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This particular couple was just not acceptable, and Steven and Lila were about to see that fact for themselves. She'd just give things a little push in the right direction. Swinging her bag at her side, Jessica sauntered over to Lila's booth. Hey, you, Jessica called cheerfully. Lila jumped a little, as if Jessica's voice had startled her out of a daydream. Yes, Satan? Hi, Jess, Lila said wearily. How have you been? Fabulous, Jessica grinned as she slid to the booth and dropped her bag on the vinyl bench next to her. I stopped at the mall on the way over and found the cutest bikini. Nice, Lila said tonelessly. The smile vanished from Jessica's face. I'll get straight to the point, she said as seriously as she could. The reason I asked you to meet me here is to tell you that I'm sorry we fought, Lila, and I have a kind of peace offering. She reached into her tote, pulled out the photo album, and slid the book across the table. Lila stared at the gift with a surprised and confused expression. She reached over and fumbled with the clasp, then slowly opened the cover. The first picture was an enlarged group shot of the whole SVH crowd from a party Lila had thrown a couple of months earlier.
Lila's hands started to tremble as she studied the photo and the inscription Jessica had lettered so carefully. Lila Follett, this is your life, was written in gold paint marker above the picture. Oh, Jess, thank you ever so much. This is amazing, she said in a hushed voice. She paged through the book, stopping every once in a while to take a closer look at the entries. I remember this, Lila exclaimed, pointing at a picture of Jessica and Lila from the second grade. They were standing outside Fowler Crest in shorts and t-shirts, having a snowball fight in the fake snowstorm Lila's father had created in the backyard with his money. Yes.
With, like, the soap snow from movie sets, or with, like, a snow machine from, like, a ski
resort? I'm picturing, like, a ski resort snow machine. Like, bring it in for my daughter's birthday. Yes, yes, bring it in. We're going to have snow in July.
I'll make it happen. Fowler isn't going to have fake snow. Not here at Fowler Crest.
I'm sorry, soap snow?
Soap? What is that?
Soap snow? Like a homeless person?
Is that
I'm
the
not
waxy?
In the scene.
Is that the waxy thing that my servant rubs on me at bath time?
Oh boy. We had the best time that day. Yeah, Jessica laughed along with her friend until the snow melted 15 minutes later. Snow has no chance in Sweet Valley, Lila said with a giggle. Jessica felt a rush of warm feelings as she saw her friend laugh for the first time in weeks. Keep going, Lai, she urged. Some of the best pictures are towards the end. It was really fun putting this thing together. I did a great job. Lila smiled and continued to flip through the pages. Suddenly, she stopped turning the pages and stared at one of the photos for a long time. What are you looking at? Jessica asked, leaning across the table to get a look at the upside-down photograph. Just wanted to do a quick scan of how much longer. We're almost there. We're almost there.
It's a bunch of us in your backyard, and Steven's with us, Lila said. Look, there's Kimberly Haver. This must be from a unicorn club party back in seventh grade. I forgot about the unicorn club.
What's a unicorn club?
It's, I think it was in Sweet Valley Twins, so back when they were kids.
Okay.
Jessica and her friends had a club called the Unicorn Club.
Okay. Sorry, we're snapping at Alfie because he's being bad, but that's not stopping him from being bad. Alfie. God.
To think he was there all this time and I didn't even know he was alive. Jessica saw the perfect opportunity to start phase two of her plan. She swallowed hard. She'd come over here to drive another nail in the coffin of the relationship between Lila and Steven. But Lila was being so nice that it wasn't going to be easy to go through with it. She forced herself to remember the sickening feeling she got when she caught Lila and Steven locked in a heated embrace in the Wakefield's kitchen.
Heated?
Yeah. Just bought off their shutter. What? I have no life force.
That's fine. I know.
She had to continue with her plan. Alfie, just jump up there or not. Make up your fucking mind.
Alfie.
Let's not be mad at each other anymore, Lila, Jessica said soothingly. You know, maybe I was wrong about you and Steven. Maybe you are perfect for each other. Lila almost dropped her soda glass as she looked at Jessica in surprise. Well, now that you mention it, she began. Jessica didn't let her finish. I bet you're just the person Steven needs to help him get ahead in his career.
Lila sat up straighter, her eyes brightening with interest. Do you really think so? I mean, I do think I could help him meet the right people and get into something really profitable.
Who does she know? She's a teenage girl.
Well, it's who does her father know? Jessica tilted her head to one side and pretended to ponder Lila's words. She tried hard not to smile. This was going to be even easier than she'd thought. I was thinking more along the lines of standing behind him, Jessica said. You know, cooking, ironing his shirts, taking his shoes to the repair shop. He'll need someone to take care of all those details when he's a successful lawyer. Lila's mouth dropped open in horror, and Jessica almost burst out laughing. Instead, she thoughtfully twisted a strand of silky blonde hair around her finger. Of course, she continued, staring at the ceiling in false reflection, you'll want to have kids right away. Steven wants a big family. The more the merrier, he always says. Jessica grinned innocently at Lila and reached forward to grab her friend's soda. She took a self-satisfied slurp. My, that is a tasty beverage. Lila's eyes narrowed in anger. I don't cook or iron, she protested through clenched teeth. I don't even know how to cook or iron.
I don't even know what cooking and iron is. And I have no intention of having kids right away. Standing up quickly, Lila bashed the table with her knee, causing the soda glass to bounce dangerously. She didn't even flinch. Lila, Jessica said, replacing the glass on the table. Where are you going? Lila gathered up her photo album and magazine and opened her purse. This is for my soda and the tip, she said, throwing some money on the table.
Honestly. How much could it cost? $10?
How much do you tip on a soda?
50 cents.
Okay.
1992.
Okay, sure.
Honestly, after all these years, I thought you knew me pretty well. I guess you don't. Jessica leaned back in her seat and put her hands behind her head as she watched Lila hurry away. Mission accomplished. Oh, yes. I do, Lila, she whispered mischievously. I hope I know you better than you know yourself. Ba, 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 ba. Oh, boy, I have to sneeze.
This book's insane.
Bless you.
Thank you. There's another one. All these cats. Like, first thing I did when we started recording this episode was Dusty's been trying to get my lap this entire time, and I picked him up, and I, like, rubbed him all over my face like an idiot, and then I put him down, and I was like, oops, can't breathe. So that was stupid.
Wow.
Oh, boy. What the fuck is going to happen in this book?
I don't know. Something needs to happen. We've hit that part where it's almost the middle.
Where it's almost the middle.
And it's just a slump of rehashing the same conversation.
Spinning wheels, yeah. Well.
And we're the middle of a trilogy, apparently, so it's like...
It's really the middle.
We're going to be left with blue balls at the end of this. Something fierce.
We'll look it up on Wikipedia and we'll find out what happened.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, thank you for listening. Thanks again to Ned and Kata Kane for joining us for a period of time on this episode before they had to jet. They have kids. It was awesome that they... could actually make the time to be on the podcast. So that was great. Thanks for listening. Tune in next time and listen to more Below Grade Level and listen to The Sketchy Show, our improv sketch comedy podcast, which you can also find wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us at cactusrodeo.com. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram and all that kind of stuff. And that's pretty much it. You guys have anything you want to say? You just want to
I have nothing
go lay down on the couch?
You pretty much covered all of it. Yeah.
Okay.
Try not to get the flu and COVID at the same time.
Yeah, that's some good advice. Yeah.
Don't do that.
Don't get the. I managed not to.
I don't know how it happened.
But I've been taking care of you while you've had it, and
it seems recommend.
Very rough. Tune in next time to find out what.
Hopefully happens. Something.
Hopefully.
What the fuck is going on?
What's up with Nana?
Yeah, I honestly want to read more about them.
Yeah.
At this point. Thank you for listening. We love you. Bye.
Bye.
Below Grade Level is a Cactus Radio production. You can contact us at podcast@cactusrodeo.com. Subscribe and follow on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. And follow Cactus Rodeo on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for more entertainment and updates. Standing next to one thing is for sure, you can be sure of nothing.